from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the 2011-2012 season in three first-class venues.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll get a preview of the Ask the Sky and the Earth concert coming up this weekend at Clues.
I'll find out about what the Wiener Dogs will be doing this year at the German Fest at the Athenaeum.
And I'll meet some women of a certain age to find out about their upcoming exhibit. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Butler Wind Ensemble took on an ambitious project that will result in a concert at Clues Memorial Hall this Sunday at 2 p.m. The ensemble will team with Chinese choirs from Indianapolis, Chicago, New York, and Connecticut to present a concert featuring the Midwest premiere of Ask the Sky and the Earth, a cantata for the Sent Down Youth. The centerpiece of the concert, with music by Dongling Hound and a libretto by Wei Su, tells the story of sent down youth of Mao's Cultural Revolution. From 1966 to 1976, upwards of 17 million Chinese youth were ordered to leave their families and move up to the mountains and down to the countryside. The stated goal was to alleviate urban unemployment, advance communist ideology, and develop China's rural areas. Sharon Gamble invited Dr. Robert Gracheski, Butler's director of bands, to talk about the genesis of the concert.
So one day a woman walked into your office and handed you a bunch of press clippings. That's how this journey started?
That's exactly right.
Did you know this woman?
No. Literally, this lady walked in and, you know, a very nice Chinese lady, and she dumped a bag of stuff onto my desk, and it was newspaper clippings and playbills and programs, and she said, and a CD, and she said, we want you to do this here. And I said, well, okay, that's a little strange. I'll take a look, you know.
Might be the first time in your career at Butler that that's happened.
Pretty much.
In three
decades.
How did she choose you and Butler? Do
well,
you know?
It's kind of a funny story. This piece has been done once before. It was done at Yale and Carnegie. Mm-hmm. Those were the premieres. And members of the Indianapolis community Chinese choir traveled to New York and Connecticut for that performance. So the people that were involved in that were so thrilled by it that they really wanted to do it again here. And they knew that Butler had, this is what they told me, they said, well, we knew Butler had a good reputation for music. And we just went on your website and looked around and looked at all the conductors and things. And they picked me, and I said, well, why did you pick me? And they said, well, you were the only one that was smiling in your picture. I said, that's a great reason.
Hey, if you're a music major out there, there's some kind of life lesson in that. I'm not sure what it is.
Keep smiling.
Keep smiling. Music is good. It's good for the soul. Doesn't mean it's easy.
That's right.
But you have to smile when it's hard. There's both a sociological, historical, and a musical angle to this that are a little unusual, combining together. Ask the Sky and the Earth. Tell me about the creators of this and then about what they were trying to commemorate.
Well, you know, this is something that I knew nothing about. And in reading up on it and reading notes on the program and writings by the people involved with this, this particular piece of music, not many Americans do know about the Sent Down Youth movement. Mm-hmm. In the 60s, as part of the Cultural Revolution, Mao Zedong sent 20 million middle school and high school age children from urban areas out to the countryside to work the soil.
20 million.
20 million. And only 18 million of them came back. I mean, it was a life of incredible hardship and toil, and but also, you know, personal finding oneself. Some people have described it as the greatest utopian experimental failure in the 20th century. But regardless of how you view the outcome, and many of the people that went through this don't view it that way at all. They have great, strong, positive feelings about their experience. But it changed a generation, like the 60s changed us here. It changed that generation forever and shaped an entire generation of young Chinese people.
Was there a shortage of farm workers? Is that part
of
the issue?
I think the genesis was that, A, he wanted to get some people out of the cities, out of the urban centers, and he wanted to jumpstart some production in the economy. Some people went out to, they cleared jungles to start rubber farms and things of that nature to get the economy, the manufacturing economy going. And also the philosophy of getting in touch with your roots, literally, in the soil.
Right.
I think that was the genesis behind it.
Were these sent down youth allowed to go home to visit their parents?
No, they were separated from their parents for sometimes up to 5-6 years.
That had to be devastating for the parents.
It was hard. It was hard.
And the kids,
Wei Su, who is the librettist for this piece, was on Hainan Island for 6.5 years. And I'm sorry, not Wei Su. I just met the choral director from Connecticut last weekend. He was 6.5 years on a farm and couldn't get off the farm, even when he was selected to go to the Central Music Conservatory because of his talent. And his family had to pull some strings to get him released from the farm so that he could go to school.
Wow.
Yeah, it was funny. He came in from Connecticut to rehearse the choir last weekend. And he said, I'm a little behind because we got hit with the hurricane and I was without power for 4.5 days. And
wow.
I said, wow, that must have been terrible. He said, well, he says, I was without power in the 60s for 6.5 years. So
it's all relative.
It wasn't too bad, right?
So the libretto, is it in Chinese or English? And how?
Well, the piece is in Chinese and it's been translated
okay.
into English. So the choir will be singing it in Chinese and will be superscripting English translations much as they do in the opera.
So, is the text dealing with individual stories or interwoven stories or telling the story of the whole generation, the sent down youth?
Each one has a different perspective. Some of them talk about the hope and the idealism from a community aspect, and some are more individualized. One of the movements that the soprano solo is a letter to home, and this girl is writing home to her mother, telling how lonely she is and things of that nature. And then there's other more upbeat tunes that describe two of the teens falling in love on the island and things like that. So it's really describes the entire experience, both the highs and the lows.
How important is it for you to prepare your wind players to understand the emotional side of this? Or is it important at all? Maybe it's just chops and music.
No, I think it's very important. I mean, you can play the notes and the performance will be there. But, part of my job is also as an educator, not just as a conductor. So I think it's important that the students know the background, the cultural history of this piece and why we're doing it, its significance, it's important. And they can then bring their own perspectives and emotions to the performance. And I think it'll make it much more meaningful to them as individual players and therefore more meaningful to the audience in terms of their performance and their expectations. As a matter of fact, it worked out perfectly this semester. Our history department is teaching modern Chinese history.
Really?
This semester.
That's
so
perfect.
They're very excited about this. And in fact, they're helping us to bring Wei Su, the librettist from Yale, to campus for some lectures and a pre-concert talk. So that's all very exciting.
And we should circle back to where we started. So this lady turns up in your office with
yeah.
these clippings and you think, okay, that's
I thought
intriguing.
It was a little strange. I'd never heard of it. I didn't know what was going on.
And you have a friend at Yale.
Yeah. Tom Duffy, a good friend and colleague of mine, did the performance at Yale. He's the band director at Yale. So I called Tom and I said, what's the deal? And he said, it's important. It's significant. You should do it. So here we are.
Here we are.
The reason that it really is important, one of the things that I tried to bring over across to the students the other day is that, we know about the Holocaust because of Anne Frank's diary and Schindler's List. And we know about the excesses of Soviet communism through the Quartet for the End of Time and Shostakovich. There were artistic statements that expressed the emotions and the political qualities of those generations of people in those countries.
Right.
But nothing, there's no art that bridges the gap of the Chinese Cultural Revolution. This is one of the first pieces that attempts to do that. And I think that's really part of its significance.
Any sense you might be able to figure out how to make a recording and release it?
Well, there's a Chinese CD of the original.
Okay.
It was premiered in China in 2008 to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the Sent Down Youth Movement. And Tom did the transcription for the wind band version. And as a matter of course, we make archival recordings of our performances at Clues. I'm not sure the legalities of making that available to the public, but certainly something that we could find out.
That makes sense. Just doing some math in my head here. So the Sent Down Youth would have been middle school, high school, mid-teen, late-teen.
Right.
So your students, if they're of a typical age, this is the equivalent of their grandparents' generation, more or less. Because they're about 40 years older.
Older parents or real young grandparents.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I mean, it was, like, can I say our generation of the 60s? it was my generation. You're too young. You're too young. But it was my generation.
I'm not bribing him. Let the record stand.
Well, I mean, my generation went through that. I mean, I was a teen in the 60s here in America. And, you know, we were changed by the 60s and the 70s, big
time. So many
time.
Things. But we mostly know about European history. We know about the Berlin Wall being built. We know about the Prague Spring.
Right.
We know so much less than you know, probably current Butler students or graduate students about the history of Asia in general.
Absolutely right. And part of that was on purpose because the government shut down things. They wanted to be insular.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part is that there is no art. There was no art produced, so we don't have that. And thirdly, and also a big factor, is the language barrier. Almost all these things are in Chinese, and we just... You know, until very, very recently.
Studying Chinese was not an option in
high
school or college.
Right, we had no, really, not very many people could access the language.
What do we know and what have you learned about the 2 million Sent Down Youth who did not return?
Not too much. It was just, that was just sort of part of what it was. That was part of the experience. Huh. And sometimes mining accidents, farming accidents. Huh. Somebody was doing something and they drowned, or they were cutting down the forest and a tree fell out, that sort of thing. And some of it was really hardship. Some of these kids, to my understanding, were sent way out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, really out in the boonies, and were really cut off. And, you know, if something happened, they had no access to, you know, good medicine or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that this piece speaks to people in your universe, even though it's a culture we're not as familiar with and a particular set of circumstances? Is there a universality about the longing for home or the being separated from loved ones?
I think so. I think the emotional content is there, and the music is Western. It's very and it's very accessible. It's very consonant. It's very accessible music. It's almost, in a sense, has a relationship to what we would consider folk music.
Mm-hmm.
In the aesthetic of it. And so, you know, that speaks to the heart. And I've been working with the Chinese choir now for about a month, and these people bring a great deal of passion to this music, and it is very they're very emotionally connected to it. And mm-hmm. So I think people will feel the emotional power of it, and they will definitely be able to enjoy the music. It's not foreign. There are elements of the Chinese folk culture in it, and some of the harmonies that we're used to in terms of thinking about Oriental music.
Mm-hmm.
There, one of the movements features a shao flute, a Chinese bamboo flute soloists.
Hmm.
So there are those aspects of it, but it's quite Western in its harmonic content.
There's a little bit of an irony in that the composer, who was a member of this generation of Sent Down Youth, is it true that he's the owner of one of the larger telecom?
Yeah, he is.
It's just like, wow, there's a political 180 degrees if
he
there
went,
ever was
he
one.
Went, when he came back, he went to technical school and is very one of the most successful businessmen in all of China.
I love that. Now, you're working with Chinese choirs from not just Indianapolis, but Chicago and New York and Connecticut.
Correct.
Walk me through. So other people are preparing the choirs that are not here.
Right.
How are you all staying on the same page about tempo, about everything?
Well, one of the ways is that the choir master in Connecticut and New York was the one that did it when they did it at Carnegie.
Got it.
So they're familiar with the piece, and they're doing, you know, they're learning it. They bring in new people to the choir and teach them the piece, but a lot of them have already done it. In fact, he was here last Saturday and worked with this choir, and then he went to Chicago on Sunday and worked with their choir.
Smart.
And I've been working with the Chinese choir here in town, and their rehearsalist has been working with them for months, months and months. They're working very, very hard. And then we are going to get together the day before the concert. The concert is Sunday afternoon, October 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
And on Saturday, they're all coming in from out of town, and we're going to have a afternoon and an evening rehearsal.
Perfect.
And put it together so that they'll get used to me and my tempos and how I do things as a conductor. And we'll have 5 or 6 hours on Saturday to put it together, and it should be fine. And then, again, one last dress on Sunday morning before the concert.
Perfect.
So I think it'll fall together pretty well.
So if some next person walks into your office with a bag full of clippings, would you be open to another adventure?
I will certainly take a look.
Sharon Gamble with Dr. Robert Krucheski, Butler's Director of Bands. You can hear Ask the Sky and the Earth, a cantata for the Sent Down Youth, as part of this Sunday's cross-cultural event featuring the 65-piece Butler Wind Symphony and approximately 110 singers. Also on the program, the American Chinese National Anthems, a composition called Dragon Rhyme by contemporary Chinese composer Chen Yi, and songs from West Side Story and Carmen. The performance begins at 3 p.m. on Sunday at Clues Memorial Hall. Admission is free and open to the public, but a ticket is required. Free tickets are available at the Clues box office. For more information, you can give them a call at 317-940-6444. Again, 940-6444.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Mark your calendars for October 8th to attend the third annual Original and Fabulous German Fest. This year's event's highlights are the Running of the Wiener Dogs, the 5K Lederhosenlauf, the Strongman Competition, and the Zwergenland, or Gnome Land, for kids. Plus, new this year is a cornhole tournament. Travis DiNicola spoke with the Athenaeum Foundation's president, Cassie Stockamp, to find out more.
Cassie, welcome back to the Original and Fabulous Art of the Matter to talk about the Original and Fabulous German Fest, your third annual one. Congratulations.
Third annual. Are you trying to copy us already?
No. I love the name of your event. And your event is so much fun. You guys have such a good time putting it on, you can tell.
It is. It's kitschy. And as you know, we've said, we just need to make fun of ourselves. It is truly crazy in that we have dog races and strongman competitions and yodeling contests and a 5K kids are going to be running in their lederhosen. I mean, just fun.
All
right?
Good stuff, yeah.
All good
stuff. Yeah, putting the fun in Germany.
Absolutely.
Something like that.
yeah, here we go.
Yeah.
No chewy beer on it either. So.
No. So this takes place on Saturday, October 8th at the Athenaeum. Starts at noon, goes to about 6 o'clock that night. Let's talk about all the great events. I know that earlier in the summer, back in August, I guess it was, for the Drum Corps International Arts Parade that they had, they had invited different arts organizations around the city to participate, and the Athenaeum Foundation was there with your wiener dogs.
We had a bunch of wiener dogs in the parade. There probably were 30, 40 wiener dogs walking up and down downtown Indianapolis just as a way of publicizing our event. And it brought a smile to literally every person that saw those little guys because we ended up having to carry them half the way around.
I noticed that. Yeah, most of them couldn't really make the whole parade route with those little legs.
That's why
theirs.
Seeing them run is rather comical.
Yeah. And this, I mean, there's a lot of great things that are part of German Fest, but I kind of do just want to start with this because because the Wiener Dog Race is, it's sort of the signature event. You actually use the Wiener Dogs as part of your logo. I've heard you got some changes this year, right?
We do. Good heavens. We have bleachers this year because last year it was so packed. I mean, what a good problem, right? But the poor little kids were getting crushed. So we have bleachers
Everyone
coming.
Wants to see it. I mean, this is, it kind of has become more popular than I think you ever could have imagined.
No, it was definitely, you know, it's funny how this things happen serendipitously, right? Yeah. So, I mean, truly, the Wiener Dog Races were a result of the logo. So it followed it. But it has become much larger than what we realized. And we're doing them on the hour because the races were compacted into about an hour and a half last year. And if people miss them, they weren't very happy. So we will do them on the hour. That way, if people miss one heat, they can make
come
the
back
next
and see
heat.
Another.
Yes.
People can bring their wiener dogs. Do they need to register ahead of time?
We would prefer that they register ahead of time because we do have different heats based on the age of their dog. And if they would miss it, that would not make them very happy. So at least go to the site so they know what time their dog would be racing.
Okay.
So they can either register on site or in advance. In advance would be preferable just for paperwork purposes.
And the dogs are running the extreme distance of about, what, 50 feet maybe?
Yeah, exactly.
Something like that.
I'm sorry. It's just funny, isn't it? Yeah.
Are there any special prizes for the wieners?
We do. We have all kinds of prizes. Pet Supplies Plus has been very gracious in providing, some really nice, so they will definitely more than get the winners get more than get their cost of entry in.
Okay.
So, and there's actually a wiener dog racing circuit out there.
No.
Oh, yeah.
You make this up.
No.
No, there really is?
So we have.
Not just locally, but.
No. Okay. I mean, it's I'm sure it's nationwide, but I know regionally. I mean, we have had our flyers out to all the different wiener dog races.
I had no idea. Well, I mean, I'm glad to hear about the bleachers, too. That's fantastic. It was. I mean, you could, like, almost get crushed by the crowd last year as people were pushing, you know, against the court or the racetrack, if you will. There's other things that are going on. Of course, there's tons of food and drink. That's
exactly.
a part of German Fest. Great entertainment throughout the day.
And let me talk about the entertainment. So we will have two stages. On one stage, we'll have the traditional Oompa bands going on all day long, actually in the parking lot. And in the beer garden stage, all of the local German groups will be participating in one form or another, whether they're dancing or singing or the orchestra's playing, the Oompa band. So it really is a wonderful combination of both paid artists as well as the local artists, which are oftentimes paid, but they're donating their services. So it is a fun day.
Yeah, lots of great entertainment. And of course, and it is, the Rathskeller is a part of it. I mean, the Athenaeum Foundation is, that's where you're located, the Athenaeum. And so you've got
absolutely.
And
the beer garden,
and food.
Yeah,
and
typically it's not open to families, but this is a special event. So kids can actually be in the beer garden experiencing that. And so it is very, very fun.
That's
the
cool.
other thing I want to talk about is the strongman competition.
Yeah, no, you know, I love watching this last year. I was really impressed by this.
It's we're going to have four or five times the number of entrances that we had last year. And there's two competitions. One is for, I guess we'll call it more the professional strongman, which is truly someone competing. And then just the layman that's interested in coming off the streets to see how they do as well.
And it's so, Bavarian stone lift, right?
It's called a Steinheben.
It is definitely
a Steinheben competition where you vertically are lifting this massive weight.
Like kind of in a squat and then pulling it up in front of you.
There you go. That's your guy.
Yeah.
I should know that.
Yeah, it's just kind of astounding. I mean, the weight that was lifted by these guys last year, I remember watching.
It was astounding. You're exactly right. I mean, they really have been training for this for a while.
Yeah,
so.
and I mean, we're talking like, 500, 600 pounds or something?
It was
crazy?
A lot. It was a lot.
Yeah. So that was kind of amazing. Now, for the kids, the Lederhosen race?
Well, not just the kids. I mean, that is truly from kids to adults. But it's fun to see the kids as well as the adults in Lederhosen running a 5K. It's a sanctified 5K race.
Okay.
So they go through the course. The course has been laid out. This is our second year for this piece of it. I think we had 300 runners last year, so we're hoping just to grow that piece as well. The mayor's going to kick it off, so he'll be there saying, starting in German, shooting the gun off, which is always kind of fun.
Now, you know, everything I can kind of see the German connection so far. But
where's the push? What are you pushing here?
Well, I know that something new this year, which will be popular, will be a cornhole competition.
Oh, yes, and you know what? There is a German competition.
Okay, I knew there must be. I just couldn't figure it out.
Well, according to Wikipedia, and as we all know, that's 100% accurate, right?
Sure.
Okay, they claim that it started in Germany. There you go. Okay. There you go. Those Germans like to have a good time.
So you are having a cornhole competition.
We are. It's going to go all day long, yeah. And we're splitting the prize with the winner.
Okay.
So it's a 50-50. It's $5 to enter. You keep playing when you win.
And keep on advancing.
Keep on advancing, exactly.
What a good deal.
You have to win 3 games. Okay. We will cut it off at 4:30. If you haven't won 3 games, you will no longer be able to advance. So from 4:30 on, the winners of 3 games will advance to the winners. Who knows how late we'll be there playing cornhole, but I think I've got some brothers coming in who are, oh my gosh, competitive.
So, and this all takes place in sort of the parking lot that's immediately to the east of the Athenaeum, as well as the beer garden, correct?
Correct, exactly.
Okay, because the first year you actually had part of it in the street.
We closed
and then moved
the other
it last
side.
Year.
We mm-hmm. did. We just wanted to be able to have that flow more into the beer garden.
Yeah.
So this year, too, we're going to have some paddles. Big paddle balloons will be floating over the building mm-hmm. in the German flag colors, which will designate that area so people can visually see where they'll be coming to as well.
And this is a benefit for the Athenaeum Foundation.
Absolutely.
Tell me a bit about that.
We have to fundraise every year just to keep the doors open. Mm-hmm. And this is one way.
It's a big, beautiful building, but I imagine it's cheap to keep open.
It's 94,000 square feet,
yeah.
And it costs in excess of $250,000 a year just to heat and cool.
Wow.
So that it's a sizable nut, not to mention just the maintenance, obviously, and upkeep on the building. So this is something to benefit the building.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the groups, they all are volunteering to help participate in that. It's interesting how much it really does take to support this old building.
And it's a beautiful building. And it's so well used right now. I mean, between, of course, the YMCA, but then all the different arts and cultural groups that utilize the building. And then we mentioned the Rathskeller earlier. I mean, it's just such a great space.
You know, it has really opened up. I mean, that's our mission. It's to be a cultural gathering place for mm-hmm. the community. And so we oftentimes will either subsidize or, you know, for new startup groups, give them space for free. And I'm pretty candid when people come in. They say, well, what's your rate? I say, you know what? We are here to support you. Mm-hmm. I'm here to maximize my income. You're here to keep it as low as possible. I get that. For these startup events, how do we make this work for you? How can we support? So that we do give away a lot of in-kind,
mm-hmm.
which is our way of trying to help these different groups. And it has been a lot of fun watching the different groups come through.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. And you really, I mean, kind of function as the cultural hub of the whole Mass Ave, Lockerbie area.
Oh, I like to think we do. I mean, obviously, Mass Ave is such a wonderful mm-hmm. place, and there's a lot of activity going on all over.
Oh, yeah.
But for the larger, you mm-hmm. know, larger events that are theater-specific, or, you know, it does definitely serve a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah. Now, people, can they get tickets ahead of time? Do they need to...
A little cheaper if they get ahead of time.
Okay.
Absolutely. Come to our website, athenaeumfoundation.org. Mm-hmm. One of the headers is Germanfest. Just click on that.
Okay.
If they can buy in advance. Or at the door, it's going to be $10, but $5 in advance. And kids are free under 12.
There's
going to be a large, large kids area. So it's definitely family friendly.
And even though it's not officially an Oktoberfest, it is a great way to celebrate October.
Absolutely. Yes. We like to think we're the original.
Travestina Cola with the Athenaeum Foundation's President Cassie Stockamp. The third annual Original and Fabulous German Fest takes place from noon to 6 on Saturday, October 8th at the Athenaeum, just off Mass Ave. Visit athenaeumfoundation.org for tickets and more information. And that is spelled Athenaeum Foundation.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Have you turned on the heat at your house yet?
You know, we did just click it on the other day.
Oh,
yep. Fall is definitely here.
That's right. The times are changing, and we're going to turn up the heat on some arts events on our calendar today.
Nice transition.
The calendar we call
What'll
We
Do? What's heating up for you?
What's heating up in the arts field?
Well, this is a fun one. The American Pianists Association, their first concert of their 2011-2012 Grand Encounters series. The first concert is coming up, in fact, this weekend. It's titled Ballads, Beats, and Big Pianos, and what a great name. It's taking place on October 2nd at 3:30 at the Talbot Street Club on Talbot Street. So you do you have to be 21 to attend. The concert's featuring Anderson and Rowe piano duo, Elizabeth Joy Rowe and Greg Anderson, with guest appearances by Dance Kaleidoscope, which is pretty cool as well. There's some Schubert, there's some Bach, Stravinsky, all types of great stuff. as well as Coldplay and Michael Jackson, the Bee Gees, and Radiohead as
wow.
part of this concert. I know. How fun is that?
One of these things is not like the other.
Yeah. So 3:30 at Talbot Street, and again, it's American Piano Association. It's the first concert of their new season.
I love that. Mixing it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Good for them. Speaking of mixing it up a little bit, the Faculty Showcase featuring musicians who teach on the University of Indianapolis faculty is coming up this coming Monday, the 3rd, at 7:30 p.m. At the Lilly Theater inside the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center. And, you know, the great thing, both Butler and U of I have these amazing series generally on Monday nights and generally free. So if you're looking for a way to expand your listening experience, check out both of these. This coming Monday at U of I, it's a very varied evening, including music of Leo Brower and Lutoslavsky and some classic jazz and, as they say, much, much more. That's Monday at 7:30 at the U of I.
Very cool. Hey, one of our favorite people, Sharon, is Kathy Day, the author who wrote the book The Circus in Winter. And Kathy is now teaching at Ball State University, teaching English up there. And her book has been adapted into a musical. In fact, we had some of the students and creative team on about, maybe a year ago when they first started working on this. Well, the musical is taking place this weekend. In fact, it is taking place on Saturday night at 7:30 and then Sunday at 2:30 if you want to get out to the University Theater of Ball State to see this adaptation of Circus in Winter as a musical. Kathy Day did consult on it. She did not write it. It's actually students from the theater program and the Center for Creative Inquiry up there who have done this and create a musical out of it. Should be really, really cool. Looking forward to hearing how that goes.
Excellent. Well, with the turning of the calendar into October, we have all sorts of cool events coming, including one of my favorite events the entire year, the Dia de los Muertos celebration at the Indianapolis Arts Center, and I'll have an interview about that in a couple of weeks. But meanwhile, you should know that the Altar exhibition is opening early in the month, October 7th. That's this coming Friday, next Friday, I should say. And that is the traditional altar exhibit made by community members, artists, schools, and families who pay tribute to deceased loved ones or groups of people who've passed on. And if you've never been to this, you might think, that sounds depressing. It's not at all. It's actually a celebration of life and a way to remember people who have passed over. And the altars are as unique as the people they honor. So go check that out. That's absolutely free at the Indianapolis Arts Center. And I'll tell you about some more special programming coming up through the month on next week's calendar.
Should be good.
Yeah.
Hey, just a reminder that the Going Solo Festival at the IRT is taking place now. They've done this in the past in sort of the early spring, but this year they're doing it. It started in September and it goes through October 23rd. And it's the third year they've done it. It's three different plays, very intimate plays, and each one features only one actor, and each one is sort of the story of one person. Lost, a memoir, is featuring Constance Macy, and then there is also Nobody Like Yogi, and I might tell you about that one in just a second. And then the third one of the group is featuring Robert Neal playing James Beard, I Love to Eat, which should be a lot of fun. These are all three really interesting plays and definitely worth checking out. The one thing I did want to mention about Nobody Don't Like Yogi, which is about the baseball player and manager Yogi Berra, is that on Friday, October 14th, I will be leading the after-show discussion about that.
Since that's
baseball and theater, and so I'm looking forward to that one very, very much.
Fun.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. And Mark Getzinger is playing Yogi Berra in that one, so that should be a lot of fun. So if you want to go to that one on the 14th, that'd be a good time to see it.
I would love to come and pepper you with questions about baseball, about which I don't know enough. Speaking of things we're doing out in the community, come see me at the Oktoberfest at the Athenaeum. I'm one of the MCs afternoon, which means I get to meet a lot of dogs.
That'll be great.
And some fun people
we'll have a great
as
time
well.
With the wiener dogs.
Absolutely.
Good. Well, we will see you at the German Fest, at the Athenaeum, and
I'll
out
see
of the
you
theaters
at IRT.
And IRT.
Everywhere.
We'll be back next week with more things on that calendar we call.
What do we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
"We've come a long way, baby," was an advertising slogan aimed at women and was popular in the 1960s. But have we? Or have them? That's the question a group of women artists associated with the Stutz Building asked themselves in their inaugural group show last year. And they found the responses so fascinating that they're creating a second group show. It opens at the Stutz Building next Friday, October 7th, and it's called Women of a Certain Age, The Skin We're In. And the exhibition also features a calendar called The Artist Revealed, plus a closing lecture by Sharon Gamble's guest, Lee Dunnington Jones.
Well, I have to start by asking you to define the expression, a woman of a certain age. There might be younger listeners who don't know that expression.
Well, I would describe the woman of a certain age as mature, and I refuse to go there with a number. We are mature women.
I like it. I like it a lot. You had a wildly successful exhibit at the Stutz last year called Voices, Women of a Certain Age, and it was so successful you're doing a corollary, Women of a Certain Age, in The Skin We're In. How did you arrive at the idea of the theme of this? Did several of the artists get together and say, you know, I've really wanted to explore body issues, body images?
I simply noticed how much, and this is a really tight-knit group of mm-hmm. women. We started with 10 women, now we have 12, and I noticed in our conversations and also with myself as I age how many body issues I had. I didn't realize how vain I was until I started losing my looks. And I just, I started getting panicky about this, and I started talking to the rest of our women, our little girl gang, the women of a certain age. We call ourselves the Wackas.
Oh, that's going to get around.
Feminine for wacko.
Uh-huh.
Women a certain age. So I noticed we were having these conversations about how we felt about our bodies, how we felt about our bodies as we age and beauty, age and women and society, and it came to me that this was a great issue for us to explore for our exhibition.
We don't have, in Western culture, a lot of role models for the beauty of mature women. I'm sure we have more than we did, say, 50 years ago. But it doesn't feel as though there are very many places we can look. Certainly you can't, if you're listening to us and you walk into a grocery store or a drugstore and look at the magazines, you're not going to find a lot of pictures of women above the age of 25, to be quite honest.
Well, that's absolutely true, and it leaves the rest of us mature women sometimes feeling a little insecure about whether we were even accepted as beautiful at 50, 60, 70 years old. And so these are the conversations that we've been having, and it's been very interesting among us how many of us have body issues. And when it came to producing the calendar that is called The Artist Revealed, which started out being we were just going to be brave and take our clothes off and have mm-hmm. our photographs taken, and be folded into a piece of our work. And that's when the serious conversation started about how uncomfortable we were doing that, even with ourselves, with other women mm. present, even without society or men or just with ourselves. And so the exhibit and the calendar have been a wonderful experience for me. We've produced some wonderful art, both for the exhibit and for the calendar, expressing a little bit about how we feel and our comfort and discomfort. And the thing that we learned the most, I think, is that however we feel about our bodies, they are a vessel, and that's all that they are, and they are not who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to reaffirm that to ourselves has really coalesced us into a very tight-knit little group. It's been a wonderful summer working on this project, both the exhibit and the calendar. And we have several events in October that are corroborating the women's issues in their bodies, in their skin.
And I know some of the proceeds, 40% of the proceeds, in fact, this is very generous, from the sale of the calendars benefits the Pink Ribbon Connection, which supports women with breast cancer.
And we're very excited about that that connection, the connection with the connection.
Mm-hmm.
Pink Ribbon is a an organization that supports women with cancer in many ways. And one of the biggest ways is that they provide for the breast cancer patients a big sister of sorts, someone who has been through the process and survived, someone who can show her scars, both physical and emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And they take, those two women take that journey together. The watchwords of Pink Ribbon are that no one should make this journey. No one should suffer breast cancer alone. And they provide, they're kind of a clearinghouse. They provide access to all kinds of medical services, services for prosthetics, wigs, clothing, and make sure that each of their patients knows where to go for each service that they need.
What a great collaboration. In addition, you're working on, for a closing reception on October 28th, a presentation called From Hoops and Stays to Spandex and Spanx. How were you inspired to delve into that?
I am a longtime collector of antique and vintage women's clothing. My collection goes from about 1830 to all the way up to 1980 and even up to 2000.
What started that?
I think the elegance of the clothes that I could choose. I mean, I started buying at thrift stores and at vintage clothing stores up by Broad Ripple where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a romance attached to clothing from the 30s and 40s. And then as I collected more, I wanted to go back farther and farther. And when I put these pieces on, I was left with a feeling of, how did these women get shaped like this? And so it didn't take me long to realize that there were some pretty powerful foundation garments that went along with looking like the movie stars of the 30s or 40s, or looking like Scarlett O'Hara.
Mm-hmm. Or being perfectly flat in the 20s.
Or
no
being
hips,
perfectly
no
flat
chest.
In the 20s. And that was quite an evolution. And I have done a talk for many years about women and fashion from 1840 to 1940, a really important 100 years from Little Women, basically, to Rosie the Riveter.
Mm-hmm.
And the talk has been about what women were wearing and how and what was happening to women politically in that 100 years, and how they were affected by one another, how women were affected by what they were wearing, and how the political position of women affected what they were wearing.
Hmm.
And so I collected quite a bit of underwear, and that would be my dark side.
I love it. I love it. I'm curious, in your conversations with the WACA, am I pronouncing it correctly? That's probably one of the other women in the group calling you right
it,
now.
As a matter of fact, is.
In your conversations with the other women, has anyone ever said that it's actually a benefit not to be, say, 22 and looking 22 anymore? Is there any way in which a more mature body has been freeing?
I don't think we're there yet. I don't think any of us are there yet. And I was surprised at the self-consciousness of each of us. And I was also surprised at the reluctance to accept a compliment of beauty. And we do have, actually our eldest member is 72, and she's quite beautiful. But it's difficult for her when I tell her how beautiful she is. My husband even told her how beautiful she is, and she sort of passed it off. So that's an interesting question, and I think we all kind of hope, aspire to get there. Mm-hmm. Most of us are really happy with where we are, but we're still struggling with how we look.
Well, you've been a jeweler for all your artistic career? Or did you start somewhere else?
I've been a sculptor since I was probably 5 years old.
Wow.
Making things with aluminum foil as soon as I could crumble aluminum foil. And it was a cheap toy.
Yeah, sure. Mom was happy. You're entertaining yourself.
But I do two-dimensional work and three-dimensional work, and have done three-dimensional work all the way up to life size off and on over the years. My actual training is from Heron in painting. But when I moved to the Stutz, I started making jewelry to have some lower priced items, mm-hmm. and none of my paintings went away, but all of my jewelry went away. So
so don't get too attached to any particular piece.
So I thought that was the writing in the sand, and have continued then with my three-dimensional career in jewelry form.
When you're creating jewelry, are you thinking, and this is relative to body image, do you create different pieces with the idea of picturing them on different body types or different ages of people, or do you simply create pieces that speak to a certain aesthetic?
I am not aimed at a specific body image, but I am very conscious of how a piece of jewelry lays on the body. Mm-hmm. And I have a Victorian sense of engineering where nothing happens by accident. Each piece, especially necklaces, are meant to lay a certain way. And mm-hmm. if they don't do that, then I've not done my engineering job well. So sometimes things are weighted or counterbalanced in order to make a necklace not flop around.
Mm-hmm.
And stay where it's put. And I love bringing interest into the back, back of the neck and down the back. Almost everyone is proud of their back.
That's also a very Victorian sensibility. Think of the bustle or the beautiful covered buttons or pearl buttons down the back of a dress. I want you to describe, and keeping in mind this is radio, so our listeners can't see what you're wearing. I'd like you to describe the necklace that you have on right now, because it's fascinating. It does have a kind of an antique sensibility, but a very modern affect, if you will. Can you describe the piece you have on?
The piece is created from vines of copper and copper leaves, and has a sort of a V shape mm-hmm. to it, and then it so it's kind of like a collar necklace. And then there is a chain built of copper rings and bronze bands to attach the chain. All of this is handmade by me. The center piece, the copper leaves and vines, are glass, covered with glass enamel. So it's quite a colorful piece. And there's a piece of dichroic glass at the very, very bottom that adds a lot of depth and dimension to the piece. It's very comfortable to wear,
mm-hmm.
and I forgot where we were going.
No, I was just curious to have you describe it, because it's really dazzling. You're wearing several pieces that you created that are beautiful and that complement one another, bracelets that are completely different but that still look as though they belong together.
Oh, I was in describing the necklace. This piece also has a back interest. I created a bronze twig and then dropped a little chain from the back of it with a leaf that matches the leaves in the front. So looks good going and coming.
as do women of a certain age.
As do most women.
Most women. Most people, we should say. we're having this conversation, you're probably spending your last couple of weeks in the studio getting ready for the show. Is there something that you haven't created yet that you're eager to finish by the time the exhibition opens?
As a matter of fact, there is. The tiara has become one of my signature pieces, and I have a client who has asked for a tiara with wings.
Ooh.
And I have been creating wings in the last two or three or four weeks and playing with them, trying to figure out how I want to make this piece for her. And in the process, came to another design that I want to make for myself and specifically for this exhibition, because it would symbolize for me flying, freedom,
transcendence,
transcending my physical body and coming to the place where I have wings and I don't have to worry about what my physical self looks like.
Sharon Gamble with Lee Dunnington Jones, painter, jeweler, and curator of Women of a Certain Age, The Skin We're In, which you can see from October 7th through October 28th at the Stutz Building. While you're there, you can support the Pink Ribbon Connection by purchasing the Artist Revealed calendar and learn about the closing lecture by Dunnington Jones called From Hoops and Stays to Spandex and Spanx. That's on Friday, October 28th at 6 p.m. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 when we'll have an All Travis All the Time show.
I'll get previews of the Broad Ripple Music Fest and the Heartland Film Fest, and I'll also get to talk with magician Christian Painter about a new spooky show that he and his wife are creating.
Plus we'll have... You can do the best spooky laugh. Plus we'll have our arts calendar recall.
What'll we do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the 2011-2012 season in three first-class venues. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.